The Emancipation Proclamation delivered roughly 4 million African Americans out of bondage and into what can only be described as uncharted territory. Legally, black people were free in the United States, free to move about, free to earn a living, to own property. But in actuality, the passage from slavery to freedom was more complicated. For people who were once considered property themselves, who'd been excluded even from learning to read the alphabet, this hard-won liberty was also a daunting challenge. There were new skills to learn, new responsibilities to meet. The Freedmen's Bureau was established in the waning days of the Civil War to help former slaves as they made that transition. Today, records from that bureau number in the hundreds of thousands. The Freedmen's Bureau Records Preservation Act was passed in the fall of 2000. It will now provide a home and a caretaker for those records at the National Archives. The first task the National Archives faces is to take a survey of these documents, many of which are in disrepair. Joseph Reedy has been working with the Freedmen's Bureau Records for the past 20 years or more. Mr. Reedy teaches history at Howard University. Professor, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give us a working definition of what the mandate of the Freedmen's Bureau was?
The Bureau was established within the War Department with jurisdiction, and the exact wording is, supervision and management of all abandoned lands and the control of all subjects relating to refugees and freedmen from rebel states.
This would be food for people who needed it. This would be medical care for people who needed
it. That's exactly right. And there were subordinate offices functioning within each state level. There was a superintendent of education. Typically, there was one of refugees as well. And they would provide material benefits as well as transportation and assorted other amenities of that nature.
Professor, let us into your classroom for just a moment. Help us understand what faced a freed slave in the United States at the close of the Civil War. On the one hand, you're free, rest of your life. What happens?
Well, I think in many respects, the definition of freedom itself was unclear in the sense that even the 13th Amendment that was ratified in December 1865 said only that slavery was prohibited. It said nothing more about the content of what this new status of freedom was to consist of. Mm-hmm. From the standpoint of those who had been freed from bondage, the world was wide open to all their dreams and hopes, in some cases, that had built up from the very beginning of slavery in the United States. The right to move around, for example, without having to answer to someone to do so. Mm-hmm. I mean, the very right of property in one's own person was something very new. But then, of course, all the responsibilities of freedom, namely providing food and shelter and clothing mm-hmm. for the individual, and in the case of families, of parents for their children, and mm-hmm. so on, all those challenges were there. And given the fact that many of the former slaveholders were not at all pleased with the result of the Civil War, namely the end of slavery, we have to presume there was a certain amount, in fact, in some cases, a great deal of tension and a great deal of opposition on the part of those who had held the political power, owned the wealth, and in effect were the powers that be in antebellum Southern society.
What kind of specific cases did the Freedmen's Bureau have to take on?
Well, it's unlimited. Labor disputes, in some respects, provide some of the clearest cut variety of troubles that they had to contend with. The terms of employment, mediating relations between employers and employees, often on the supposition that employers did not want to pay anything for the work that they were exacting from their laborers. So that could be, in some respects, one of the largest categories of difficulties that the Freedmen's Bureau had to mediate. But they ranged through a wide variety of issues, some of which you might not even conceive of in terms of 20th century challenges. Well, let me give you one example,
please.
And if you'd permit me to read from a document from the period.
Of course.
This is a case of a letter written by a woman who had been held as a slave, who was sold away from her husband after having had at least one child with him. And then she remarried and she had several other children with her new husband. And after the Civil War was over, her second husband had died during the war, and she was trying to get reunited with her first husband in Virginia. Now, through the mediation of the Freedmen's Bureau, they came in contact with each other. And on April 7, 1866, she wrote a letter to the husband. She said, "I seat myself this morning to write you a few lines to let you know that I received your letter the 5th of this month and was very glad to hear from you and to hear that you were well. You wished me to come to Virginia. I had much rather that you would come after me, but if you cannot make it convenient, you will have to make some arrangements for me and the family. I have three little fatherless girls. My husband went off under Burbridge's command and was killed at Richmond, Virginia. If you can pay my passage through there, I will come the 1st of May. I have nothing much to sell, as I have had my things all burnt, so you know that what I would sell would not bring much. You must not think my family too large and get out of heart, for if you love me, you will love my children, and you will have to promise me that you will provide for them as well as if they were your own. I heard that you spoke of coming for Maria, but was not coming for me. I know that I have lived with you and loved you then, and I love you still. Every time I hear from you, my love grows stronger. I was very low-spirited when I heard that you was not coming for me. My heart sank within me in an instant. I will now close by requesting you to write as soon as you receive this. So no more at present, but remain your true, I hope to be with you soon, wife, Willie Ann Gray to Philip Gray." And then in a P.S. she adds, "Aunt Lucinda sends her love to you. She has lost her husband and one daughter, Betsy. She left two little children. The rest are all well at present. Phoebe's Mary was sold away from her. She heard from her the other day. She was well." So what this letter does, in effect, is provide an insight into the human consequences.
That's an opera there.
Of the slave trade.
Isn't it?
Exactly. And then the personal challenges that men and women had to face, knowing that their love was strong, but was torn apart through no desire of their own.
Yeah.
In some cases such as this, the Freedmen's Bureau did provide transportation to facilitate the reuniting of families that had been separated that way.
Professor Reedy, looking back on it, was the Freedmen's Bureau a proud achievement of post-war United States policy?
I think it was. In many ways, I guess, the Freedmen's Bureau was the first real federal social service agency in the history of the United States. Obviously, it had limitations. The time limitation, for one, clearly hampered it, what it could effectively accomplish. And there are respects in which the former slaveholding planters, in fact, were able to present their case to the Freedmen's Bureau in such a way that in some cases the Bureau served as a labor recruiting agency on behalf of large landowners. But having said all of that, I just cannot even begin to picture the kind of social tension that would have resulted had there not been the Freedmen's Bureau there to serve, to some extent at least, as a referee between the very different interests of the former slaveholders and those who had formerly been slaves.
Professor Reedy, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The place where you teach, Howard, is named after General
Indeed.
Howard, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Joseph Reedy is a professor of history and associate dean of the Graduate School at Howard University, joining us in our studio.